Jeff and Eric noticed one day that nobody on the internet talked about movies, so they had to find a way. They'll podcast thoughts on new movies they've discovered through autumn, winter, spring, and summer on Fridays. And when you run out of films you love to view, tune into jokes, playing games, all this and more you'll find contained on PBS with Bear and Snyder.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I am Jeff Bear. This is Eric D. Snyder.
Hi, everybody. I'm one of the hosts of this show, Eric D. Snyder. That's my other host, Jeff Bear. Here to bring you the week's new movies and hot celebrity gossip. Not really.
No, not really.
I assume there are podcasts that are just about celebrity news.
Yeah. Ugh. And then they would have hot takes.
Mm-hmm. They'd have hot takes on things and talking about what Brangelina are up to.
Well, they would mainly just be talking about what they read on other websites. Like, they wouldn't actually be right. Doing any reporting.
It's probably just an audio version of In Touch magazine or whatever.
Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. You know, before we get to the reviews, I want to mention we haven't gotten any iTunes reviews in a while.
Oh, goodness. So that's right.
We implore our listeners to go to iTunes and write us a review. And we'll read it on the show in old-timey voice. It's always a good time. People always enjoy that. We always get so many cards and letters when we read those on the show. So write us a review on iTunes and we'll read it. Okay. Now we got that out of the way. Now movies.
There we go.
Spectre? James Bond, number 24.
And we got Daniel Craig doing his fourth. And who knows? Maybe he'll do one more. Maybe he won't. We can't bug him about this question. We can just wait and see.
Well,
that's all we can do, people.
His contract. He's signed for one more, but he's made it clear that he's sort of over the whole James Bond thing. And you know, I might be too.
About him doing it, or just Bond,
I don't know.
Period?
This one just sort of.
It was.
I just saw this movie last night, and I don't really remember any of the action scenes. Like, nothing really stands out as being.
I do.
Which one?
Mainly the one on the train while he's in the tuxedo for no good reason.
Yeah.
That one, to me, was pretty dang great.
That was pretty good.
I thought that was really good, but mainly because that was one of the few action scenes that kind of. It kind of brought to mind Bourne or Mission Impossible. Mm. And it was one of those things where it's like, yeah, you're tapping into that fun stuff. Or even
it wasn't a very big or a very long action scene. It was a good scene, but it certainly was not like a showcase centerpiece thing or anything.
Right. Whereas, they definitely have some showcase centerpieces here. And in fact, that it's weird that you say that because to me, I very much noticed that this was a Bond going through the motions. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how I felt. But they decided, the powers that be, the ones, the six screenwriters on this movie, the director Sam Mendes, they felt like it might be the most important and emotional James Bond that we've ever seen. That was kind of the vibe that I felt like they kept trying to insist was occurring here. And it never felt like they were doing that. Whereas for me, I've said this before. Skyfall is my favorite Bond. It didn't seem like it was desperately trying to show you how important everything was and to constantly tell you how important everything was. Yeah. Things would just happen in that one.
The last few have been. I agree with you. The last few have talked more about Bond's psychology, and there's been continuity from one film to the next, and so these things have been adding up and sort of weighing on him. And there's been a lot about how it's the future and surveillance and spies might be old-fashioned. And this movie was the one where I felt like, okay, enough already. All right, it's the future and surveillance and spies are old-fashioned. Fine, just get back to the – quit trying to apologize for the fact that you're James Bond. Quit trying to justify James Bond's existence and just be James Bond. And it just this one just didn't – which wasn't very much fun.
Well, that was the thing. I think they probably I don't know exactly, but it felt like there was one joke every 20 minutes, and they definitively needed one joke every 10 minutes.
They needed
to lighten this mood, because right away what we have is well, first of all, the screen tells us the dead are alive, and so that simply means you're going to be watching everybody to see if you really see them truly be killed. Or they're not dead yet, obviously.
Right.
And not only that, there's probably characters that we don't know about that we thought were dead that are coming back, or so on and so forth.
Right.
So it's like they almost immediately set it off to where it's like, well, death is going to be tricky in this one. So that'll be part of the suspense. And it's like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
But then, like, James Bond blows up a building, and it feels like he's the terrorist for a second.
A little bit.
Like, just for a second, it was just like, this is uncomfortable. Is he okay with all this?
Let me say, by the way, a bit of Bond trivia. In all the Bond movies, that's the first time he's been to Mexico.
Oh, really?
All the globetrotting he's done, that's his first visit to Mexico.
Don't worry, everyone.
He killed some people there.
That's a weird thing about this movie, too. Like, Mexico City looked great. The parade, the Day of the Dead parade, mm-hmm. looked fantastic. All throughout the movie, the costumes are just really cool. The buildings are sweet. Everything's like good looking, but it feels hollow.
And the villain, this is a useless villain. All the more disappointing because he's played by Christoph Waltz, who is so great. But the villain in the movie, it felt to me like he gets comparatively little screen time for what you expect of the villain.
Very little screen time until the final act.
Is there, it felt anticlimactic with him. He didn't really have like a very great plan, particularly not very interesting. It seemed like a wasted opportunity, especially with this particular villain who they're clearly going to set up to come back in future movies.
They tap into some of the Bond lore,
right? They are sort of rebooting all the old characters and stuff.
Yeah. With this villain in particular, and it's just kind of like, all right, you're telling me how, like, you know, this is affected. The emotional psyche of Bond in layers that we haven't even comprehended before. But you're just telling me it. And then...
and they spring some new biographical stuff on us about Bond.
Yes.
About his childhood.
Because, you know, because, like, well, that's a hole that we can now fill. Sure, and now it supposedly matters more. Q is still fun for how little he's in it.
Q is fun.
Rafe, meh. Give me Judi Dench again, even though that's impossible.
I know. I'd forgotten... Spoiler alert for Skyfall. I had forgotten that Judi Dench died at the end of that one.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the opening credits, when they're getting to it, and it said, and I was like, oh, and Judi Dench as M. Oh, Rafe, oh, that's right. And I was sad all over
and
again.
And Rafe was actually really good in Skyfall, and I was like, well, that's going to be a fun dynamic. That'll be really interesting.
Yeah.
And it was like, nah, they're kind of, unfortunately, in this movie, doing their separate things and not really.
And this also... Just like with the villain, it feels like they're setting up the villain to be really good in another movie. It feels like this is the movie for M, where he comes around to being on James Bond's side. Instead of being sort of against him, this is where he realizes, okay, James Bond is right. And so in the future, I suspect there'll be lots of good interaction. But
how sweet. Like, there's a couple of good things, such as the line, "You're a kite dancing in a hurricane, Mr. Bond."
Mm.
That's a good line. I like that line. But then the so at one point, you guys are never going to believe this. Bond gets out of the main villain's ultimate plan to harm him. He's able to escape that plan.
Yeah.
Nobody sees that coming.
Amazingly.
And then all I could think of after that was, well, James Bond tells the woman he's with, and more importantly, us, we're not done yet, or it's not over yet. Because you think for a second, it's like, all right, good. We can get out of here in 2 hours.
Yeah.
But he announces it, and it's like, oh, all right, let's see what you got. And the backup plan from this master villain, it, like, involves, like, he printed out some like black and white photos. And it was just like one of those things where I was like, oh, villain, this is pathetic. Like, this is an embarrassing plan B to try to kill Mr. Bond. It is not meaningful at all to me.
It was also a little embarrassing. Monica Bellucci, the lovely Monica Bellucci, shows up fairly early in the movie, and then she's gone. Yep. I kept waiting for her to come back again and matter somehow.
Yeah, but, nope. but instead we have Leah how do you say?
I'm going to go with Seydoux.
Seydoux. And
she's a Frenchie.
Yeah, she's all right until there's declarations of love.
That is surprised me. Wait, like, wait, what? No, you don't. She said, I love you. And I thought, no, you don't.
Can we both state our ages for the record first? Just can we do that before we get into this love thing that's moving a little too quickly for me to handle?
She was born in 1985. Daniel Craig was born in, I'm going to say it's 1968. Mm-hmm. I believe his character, I think that when they showed us, we saw a bit of the date of birth. I think the character was born in 71, but still, yeah, okay. 14 right. years old.
14 years. And the plot itself is very Bond in the sense of, oh, I got to get a clue in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to go over here and get another clue.
It's by the numbers.
And with that, you're just, because it is 2 hours and 28 minutes, something like
that. It's
the
longest Bond, more trivia for you.
Because of that, you're just kind of like, you know, you probably could have, like, shortened this up. You probably could have not gone on that one adventure in that one country.
You could have cut Monica Bellucci out of the movie altogether.
Yeah, you could have, because she served no purpose except to show that Bond was quick to have sex.
Well, she advanced the story a little bit. They could have cut out that interlude.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, yeah.
There was one moment where it was just like, oh gosh, come on, this is outdated. Thankfully, it rebounded. But on the train, mm-hmm. like, what's his name? Dave Bautista, who was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh yeah, that guy.
Who's just a villain who doesn't talk, but very strong. That's it. That's who he is. At one point, it's like Bond and him punching, and he just turns back to like slap the girl, and that knocks her out for a while. And it's just like, can't we be done with that moment of like somehow this guy can have 300 blows to the face and be thrown around everywhere, and a backhand to a woman is going to end her from the scene? I think that needs to change.
The idea that a woman will be that easily knocked out?
Yes. That's done. Let's move on from that trope.
I assume that's to avoid the discomfort of like that we feel when you like really punch a woman in the face.
But at least that like
like, yes, that's more realistic about knocking her out.
Then that shows it's like, good God, you're evil.
Yeah, but then immediately
lock her up or, you know. I don't know. Something. Just don't do that.
To be fair, James Bond got knocked out by a blow to the head, too.
That was a gun to the back of the head.
Still.
I'm just saying. It does look really good, though. And there are some – I know you said, like, they're forgettable, but I think it was all good action. It just wasn't Mission Impossible action from, like, what we saw this summer. To where you found like, oh my gosh, there was four amazing set pieces. Here it was just like, yep, this is a set piece and it's good. This is a set piece and it's good. It's a 7 out of 10 for me.
C+.
Mm. I don't need anybody to talk about drones and surveillance in movies anymore.
Mm, that's another one, me too.
And like needing more.
That's what I mean. They've all been about this the last few Bond movies. Like,
just, I know.
And it used to. I think I even prefer it back when there wasn't continuity from one movie to the next, because now it's all just stacking up, and now it's all getting to be too much. I almost prefer when it's just sort of wipe the slate clean every time. Maybe refer to one past love who died or whatever, but to keep mentioning all the things, I don't know. Takes the fun out of it.
This Bond is so serious. He's not fun.
All right. See you in hell, Bond. Let's talk about Suffragette.
Ooh, speaking of not fun.
Mm, you didn't think this was funny?
Are you boys and girls at home ready to take your medicine? because that's what this movie is. This is medicine, and guess what? You need it.
Yeah, or it couldn't hurt you, because you know how here's what this is about. You know how women vote? That's a thing that they're allowed to do.
Yeah, everybody's doing it.
Yeah, they didn't always used to be able to.
Impossible.
No, it's true. And this is set in England, in old-timey England, 1912, when there was a fighting for the right to vote.
So what you're saying, suffrage. In 1912, Meryl Streep told women to vote, and then because she's so powerful and she's Meryl Streep, then it all worked out? The end?
That's basically, yeah, this is a story of how Meryl Streep taught women how to vote.
Nice. By the way, for the record, Meryl Streep's in this movie for a very limited role.
Yeah, so it's going to be awkward when she gets nominated for an Oscar anyway. They're going to have a hard time justifying that.
Hang on. Right now, are you saying you think she will be nominated, or are you joking?
Not really.
You don't think she will
be. I don't really think she will, no.
Will you be shocked if she's voting?
I would not be shocked. I would shake my head, but I would
be annoyed because that would mean somebody like Helena Bonham Carter not then be recognized for her work, which it's like, are you guys ready for this? Okay. She's in this movie and she's not insane.
It's because she broke that horcrux that Tim Burton had on her. Somehow she killed that so she can get away from him.
She can do it.
She escaped his clutches. Nice.
But anyway, the lovely Carrie Mulligan is the lead here.
She's probably the prettiest character named Maud that I've ever seen in a movie.
I think it's so lovely that we are discovering this story through somebody who is very ordinary in 1912 London, and also very ordinary in discovering, like, she's discovering this along with us. I love that idea as opposed to being
she's not one of the suffragettes to start with. She's just a regular laundry woman.
And it's based on a true story, but I can't imagine Maud is like one individual character, and this is like true in that perspective of it. I think the movement is true. I think clearly some of the characters are real, but my hunch would be there isn't a Maud. I don't know. I didn't research. That's not who I am.
No, it's not. No one's ever accused you of that.
So yeah. So anyway, it's just this woman, and she's going along and she's working hard.
Working at laundry. She's worked there since she was a little girl. She was born there. That's right. Her mother worked there. And now her husband also works there with her. Her husband
also,
is Q. Ben Whishaw.
Yeah. But he's not very good at computers in this one.
Because they don't. Well, we don't know. There aren't any computers.
Well, that's true.
He might be brilliant.
Sonny could be good. Who knows? And then they have a little son who's a cute little boy.
Mm-hmm. Don't get too attached to him.
Anyway,
so she gets sort of brought into the suffragette movement. One of her co-workers is going to go testify at a little committee hearing or something, and she goes along and winds up testifying herself, and then sort of gets brought into that life.
Yeah, really slowly, really slowly brought into the life. You can tell that she's contemplating what it means for her, what it means for others, and The whole movement of the suffragettes was all about the idea of like pretty much causing anarchy because their voice wasn't heard.
Yeah, the passive civil disobedience was not working. Now it was time to actually like throw rocks through windows and stuff.
Right, and then some. And so there's
mailboxes.
There's time spent in jail for some of these women. There's different levels of commitment for what some are willing to do and what others aren't. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Meryl Streep comes in to give a pep talk, which she's good at. There's just a heart-wrenching scene in this movie.
Things were not good for women in general at that time. And in terms of their rights, they couldn't vote, obviously. And if there was a divorce, they wouldn't necessarily get custody of their kids. It was because men were in charge of everything. Men got everything.
Yeah. And I think what I really liked too was for the time, Sonny, Ben Whishaw's character, mm-hmm. wasn't necessarily evil in the time. Like he didn't, it was one of those, like they found that right balance of not knowing better.
He was, yeah, he was probably like an ordinary man. Women didn't vote. That's just how it was. But he didn't hate women, and he loved his wife. And it just,
and then not only that, look at how the neighbors are looking at it. Like, this is getting out of control. Like, our life is really being affected here.
Right. Not a bad guy.
Yeah, and also finding a balance with that is what's the guy's name? That was the investigator,
Brendan Gleeson.
Yes. Evil, yes, but at the same point, you were able to see his perspective on the thing.
Yeah, well, and not evil, and not just evil. Got him on the wrong side of it.
Not evil, on the wrong side of history.
And he, that character, I feel like we always see in these movies, the authority figure who's really gruff and like very aggressively doing his job, who comes around a little bit in the end, and we come to see his human side, which is good. It always feels a little bit like a trope.
A little bit, yes.
But he's good performance.
Yeah. And again, to me it's medicine, but it was good medicine. I'm really happy I saw it. I look forward to others seeing it and hopefully talking about it.
The women said, when as far as why they're blowing stuff up, one of them said, war is the only language men listen to.
Yeah.
It's true.
True. It's true. Totally.
It's fine. For me, it falls in the category of historical, fact-based movies that tell the story, get the point across, but not in any particular, artistic way or memorable way. Mm. Just good enough. Good enough.
I think it's pretty good. I give it an 8.
B minus.
All right. Miss you already.
I feel like there are 20 of these a year, and they all come out between September and December.
No, that's not true. There's 20 Miss You Already's.
Tell us about Miss You Already.
Miss You Already. You know how Drew Barrymore and Toni Collette are best friends?
Sorry, I stopped listening after Drew Barrymore.
You know, it's getting to that point for me, too. but I didn't really know that going in. I thought I still liked Drew Barrymore. Mm. I don't know anymore.
Yeah, so what happened? What happens
to him? Toni Collette has breast cancer.
All right.
And so this movie goes through the concept of best friends. One, Drew Barrymore is a bit of a pushover, like always following Toni Collette's character around. And Toni Collette's a little bit more of a free spirit who maybe things have worked out a little bit better for, I guess. Mm-hmm. But she gets breast cancer. And then the movie just goes through the greatest hits of what chemo would be like, what it's like for your best friend to be hurting, what happens when pregnancy is involved with the other friend. Does she hide the information? Does she not? Filled with can't find the right time to tell her this sort of thing, or, oh, you're so selfish with cancer kind of vibe.
Right.
And
how's the lead singer of All American Rejects? Tyson Ritter.
What?
Ace? Plays a guy named Ace?
That's who that is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's pretty. I would actually classify him as pretty in this movie.
Yeah, I don't think he's really acted much before. I was just amused to see him.
But it's just filled with the like, all right, how long is this person going to wait with this information? All right, how long is that character going to wait with that information? All right, how are the friends going to fight? All right, how are they going to get back together?
All right.
The only thing that truly bugged me was a hint of a flash forward to start the movie, which then leads you to believe one thing might happen.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, okay, that didn't exactly happen, but of course it's still going to happen. The end.
All right, I've lost interest. What do you give it?
It's a 5.
All right.
It's really good at being average.
By the way, the reason I didn't see the movie is that they asked if we wanted screener links, and then we said yes, and then they didn't send them out to everybody.
They only send them out to the really tall ones.
Yeah, who even they had to ask twice. Yes, so roadside attractions, I'm not convinced you really want critics to see this movie.
Which, after
judging
seeing the movie,
by your actions, I'm thinking I'm not super enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
So those are all the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about question of the week.
Okay.
Oh, because also there's a Peanuts movie, which neither of us saw.
Peanuts. Yeah, a Peanuts movie.
The screening was on a Sunday. Who's going to a screening on a Sunday? Get out of here with that.
Yeah, you had a date, right? With somebody named God. I hope he's worth
exactly.
it. I hope he's worth it, Eric.
Well, yeah, so we didn't see the Peanuts movie. I don't remember what your excuse was.
My excuse because
I wasn't
was
going.
I had to buy a couch. Oh. I had to go buy a couch. Couldn't do it. But anyway, we still asked the question and you still answered. What comic strip should be made into a movie? Everybody said Peanuts and they did it. The end.
Actually, I bet everybody said Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, have you not looked yet? Yes.
No, correct. I have. But yes, that's sort of I saw that another, I guess there's another movie podcast, Fighting in the War Room, with our friends Matt Patches and Katie Rich and some others. And I saw this was also their question of the week, but they stipulated not Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh.
I guess predicting that would be everyone's go-to answer. I think Dallas is right that Dallas Neighbors is right. Bill Watterson doesn't want a Calvin and Hobbes movie, and it would be bad.
Oh.
And I think that I feel like that's probably the correct answer.
That's funny. Wait, which Dallas did you say?
Dallas Neighbors.
Oh, okay. But he also said Kathy starring Melissa McCarthy. And he says, I wouldn't watch it, but it would make money.
I would watch the crap out of a Kathy movie starring Melissa McCarthy.
Ack. Is that Ack. What that was? That was, Ack. Yeah.
Yeah.
I never
sweat
read
drop, sweat
did
drop,
you
sweat
ever. Drop. That's the thing. I only know Kathy from Saturday Night Live. I never read that strip.
I
knew it existed. I saw it there when I was, you know, big into reading the comic strips.
When I read the comics page, that was kind of in my repertoire. I'd at least kind of glance at it. I was familiar with it.
Brandon goes deep. Did you see Brandon's?
Yeah. Family
Yowzer.
Circus.
Brandon.
Young Billy from Family Circus has witnessed the murder of one of the for better or for worse ladies. From out of a bullet-riddled station wagon emerges a traumatized toddler. Looks to Billy to save her. Wow, then it's very elaborate. Oh, and they go into other, they're going along in other comic strip worlds.
Yeah, the cut scenes using the map with shoe prints panels from the strip.
Okay, right.
And they're entering everybody's world. Garfield, Ziggy, Marmaduke, Rex Morgan. What was Rex Morgan's occupation? Was he a doctor or
MD.
A PI? He was an MD.
Rex Morgan, MD.
Gotcha.
And the killer turns out to have been Kathy.
For a long and depressing series of reasons. Yep, there we go.
And finally, Billy does a revenge-bound... He's a revenge-bound program piece of humanity with a crowbar in the final showdown. Look, I am very much on board with that, Brandon.
Dustin, I'm reading it, says Calvin and Hobbes.
All right.
We could see a middle-aged Calvin sitting at the bedside of his daughter who is clutching tight to a stuffed Hobbes. He's regaling her with stories of adventures he and the tiger shared. We, the audience, get to live through all of them from prehistoric exploration to spaceman spiff. In the end, we cut back and she is smiling. Right before she closes her eyes, we see Calvin crying and the real version of Hobbes standing behind him with a supportive arm around his shoulder. Calvin got to share a little piece of magic with her before her illness takes her away. This is too grim. And my answer to you is like, yes, but I have sincere tears like tearing up right now with that idea. There was a short
successfully
film.
Emotionally manipulated you.
Oh man, did it ever. There was a short film that very much did this where this boy was alone and had cancer in a ward, and this nurse would tell him like this story of where he was going. Mm. And it was just like wondrous and imaginative.
Right. I know, dying kids. Dying kids will get you every time. Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, that's too grim, Dustin. There's no reason for the Calvin and Hobbes movie to be about a dying child. Get out of here.
I got to drown my sorrows in today's drink sponsor.
Which is?
Coconut sparkling water.
Huh.
It's a thing.
Oh, well, they found a way to improve on water. Thank goodness, finally.
All right, what are you saying?
Fred says, get fuzzy. Although I would be concerned that it would go the way of Garfield and just be a bad movie. Are you familiar with Get Fuzzy?
Zero clue what we're referring to here.
It's a funny strip. It's a guy who has a cat and a dog. The cat and the dog both talk. And that's just how it is in the world. But it is funny. The dog is like nice and simple and the cat is a jerk. It's sort of a grittier Garfield and Odie and John situation. That's actually funny.
Emily says another one I'm not familiar with. Pearls Before Swine. Do you know that one?
Yeah, that's one with a little, it's a little, there's a little rat and a pig and some other animals.
All right, so
it's
rat. All,
it's kind of, it's, and it's one of those that's self-aware. They make meta references.
Rat would be a super sarcastic Bradley Cooper. Pig, doofy Jack Black. Mm-hmm. Weird Al for all the Crocs. Goat right. is John Hurt. And Piglita is Penelope Cruz.
All right, yeah. Yeah, the crocodiles are always trying to eat them. And they're kind of funny. Yeah, I can see that.
All right.
Bloom County, says Peter. I've recently been reading the old Bloom County. Been reading the old books.
What a life. You refreshing are so my weird. Memory.
What? It was a beloved comic strip. They've right, published them right. In the in these books.
Okay.
Richard Dreyfuss is the voice of Opus. Really? I don't know about that. I don't know. David Cross is Steve Tallis. Yeah. Jesse Eisenberg is Milo. Michael Cera is Binkley. Oh, that's good. Yeah, all right. A few others.
All right, wait. So Nick says it too. It's he goes live action CGI on this.
Okay.
Charlie Sheen is Steve. How do you feel about that?
Charlie Sheen is Steve Dallas. He's kind of too old to be Steve Dallas, but okay. He definitely looks the part. Yeah.
Nick Nolte is Bill the Cat. His dialogue is limited to a variation of "ack."
Right.
What does that mean?
That's what all Bill Cat ever says. Okay. He's like this drunk hairball spitting.
And then Oscar Isaac as Opus, using his Llewyn Davis voice.
All right. Fair.
Which one wins, in your opinion? Which version do you want to see? Give it to us straight.
I think probably, I mean, but yeah, probably you'd want to go the live action CGI hybrid. Because that strip is mostly humans with some animals. Charlie Sheen would be pretty good as Steve. I think I like Nick's. Although Michael Cera as Binkley is pretty good. Did you not read Bloom County? Are you not a Bloom County fan?
No, I didn't.
Well, you were missing out.
Wasn't it very political? Is that what it was?
It was often political.
Yeah.
Bill the Cat ran for president every 4 years with Opus as his running mate.
All right.
It's a big deal.
Mickey says it would almost certainly be terrible, but I could see an Archie and the Gang movie. Kind of surprised that that hasn't been done yet, to be honest. I kind of am too.
Betty and Veronica and Jughead.
Yeah.
Surely it's in the works. Surely someone's working on it. Because it's an old comic that no one really likes that much or remembers all that fondly, but everyone's aware of.
Yeah.
And those seem to be the main criteria for making movies based on old properties. It's like, well, people have heard of it.
It has some recognition somewhere. Yeah. Yep.
Prince Valiant, automatic Oscar for hairstyling.
I don't remember Prince Valiant.
He's an old-timey knight going around doing Valiant stuff.
You guys should have seen Eric's sword work.
Mm-hmm.
It was very impressive right
You know, there. Just swashing swords around or whatever.
I don't really, I did read a lot of comics. Trying to remember what I really truly loved though, that I would actually want to see, like for better, for worse would not, that'd be boring as all heck.
It'd just be kind of a family drama. Yeah.
Family Circus would probably be something, you know, that like Steve Martin would have, cheaper by the dozen kind right. of stuff or whatever it was called.
Family Circus. Would be good if they did the Brady Bunch route, if they sort of had fun with it and sort of played on our perception of,
of
Family Circus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I do know.
Like maybe they're all a bunch of, you know, these nerdy, backwards, old fashioned kids mm-hmm. living in the modern world.
Like a 1950s right. sweetheart kind of thing.
Right.
But yeah, living in there. Yeah.
That could work. Over Bill Keane's dead body.
Whoa.
Which I'm pretty sure...
Is he dead?
I assume.
Oh, well, then let's go ahead and do it.
All right.
There we go.
Garfield,
I think, was my favorite as a kid. I mean, I did read all the Family Circus too, but like Garfield was my favorite.
I always read the Garfield books, way into the Garfield books when I was like...
Yep, the 9, treasuries,
mm-hmm.
you mean? The mm-hmm. Garfield treasuries?
Yeah, that comic strip, like most comic strips, Garfield was pretty funny when it started.
Yeah.
Family Circus, same thing, was actually pretty funny. Dennis the Menace, they were all good when they started. And then long about, yeah, after they've been around for about 40 years, they
started sort of finally to run a little
wore thin. Out their welcome.
Yeah. Question of the week. Oh, wait, go ahead. Sorry.
Where are people reading comic strips, I wonder? I wonder, are these people subscribed to newspapers? Which I know many people still do.
I bet no. I bet it's online.
Online?
I bet, yeah. I bet they have. Because I remember when you used to like design your own homepage for Yahoo and stuff like that. I would occasionally put a comic strip or two on that homepage. I don't think you can't even do that.
But that was also
15
years ago that you were doing
that. I know, that was 15 years ago. Jeez.
Like now. There was plenty
of papers to choose from back then.
All right, it's time for a game. Would you like to play a game?
I would like to play a game. Would you like to play a game?
I would. How about a round of character casserole?
Ooh.
We haven't played that in a while.
It's been eons.
We may have forgotten that it existed.
How long's an eon?
It varies.
Got it. Thanks.
All right. The way this works, you, Jeff, not you, the listener, you've got the list of the all-time highest grossing movies adjusted for inflation.
I do.
And I have a random number generator. We're going to choose three numbers or three choices, three movies. And we're going to take a character from each one and make up a new movie with those three characters.
We have 200 movies to choose from. The range is 1 to 200.
Your first random number is 35. The 35th highest grossing film of all time when adjusted for inflation.
1969.
2001.
No, 1969.
Oh, sorry. I misheard you. Planet of the Apes?
There's a character named Sundance. He's not really a kid.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
There you go. Who do we want?
Let's do Sundance.
All right.
Because that's Robert Redford, and I thought of him first. Your second number, 147.
Woo, all the way down to 147. Oh, it's a sequel.
Okay.
From 1985. It originally grossed $150 million. Now that's worth $353 million.
It's 85, a sequel.
A rated R sequel. It's bloody. 1985.
I don't know.
Probably bloodier than the first.
Oh, one of the Rambos.
Rambo, First Blood Part 2.
There you go.
Which I think people have declared is the best one, right? Is that what people think?
I don't know.
Or is that the like insane wrong people, action maybe. One? I don't know. I don't know.
The third one was more insane. The first one, First Blood, is a pretty good movie.
Just a good, yeah.
And both the Rambos, I always just thought were loud noise.
Gotcha. Maybe Rambo?
Sure, yeah, maybe Rambo.
All right. Rambo.
So we got Rambo and the Sundance Kid.
Let's see who's playing with them.
Third random number, 196.
196.
Down near the bottom of the list.
196. Oh, interesting. 2009, originally made $277 million. Now that's worth $309
million. That was nine.
Man, times have changed.
Is it animated?
No. Although there's a baby in it for a little bit. Rated R.
I don't know.
Vegas.
The Hangover?
Yeah. The Hangover.
All right.
Should we go with Zach Galifianakis as a character just because then he can drug them and something can come from that? Or
yeah.
Should we go a different way?
No, okay. Let's go to Zach Galifianakis and then maybe Rambo will kill him.
As soon as he... Oh, so wait. Zach does his thing. What's his name? What's that character's name?
Don't know. There's no way of knowing.
No. But, all right. So, Sundance, Rambo, and... Can't believe I forgot
Alan.
This character.
His name's Alan.
Alan. Rambo, Alan, and the Sundance Kid.
Mm-hmm. They, let's see.
Alan needs new friends because he actually did. We find out later, but he actually did end up killing Bradley Cooper and Justin Bartha and Ed Helms.
Just, this is a side note, but can we have learned that he killed them in the first movie? So the sequels were all his imagination?
Yes.
He just imagined that.
Yes.
So he killed his friends, and he's...
Oh, my gosh.
And he's loopy. He's nutty in the head.
Okay, I'm not even kidding. I might watch Hangover Part 4 if that's the first scene in the movie.
It turns out he's in a mental institution.
Yeah.
He killed his friends and imagined the sequences of 2 and 3. And so then how does he wind up with Rambo and the Sundance Kid?
He's crazy. Hello.
Yeah.
They're in the mental ward too.
They all meet in the
mental ward.
A couple of guys who say they're Rambo and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah. But turns out they are because they there is an actual accidental portal.
Time travel thing
that nobody knew existed, but it turns out it was real.
I think we can assume in most of the character cast roles that there's a time portal involved.
Right.
It's sort of
a given.
But this
one's, it's not in their head. It was real.
Right.
So they end up there. They're all in there together.
And they escape, which will be easy. I'm sure Rambo can escape from a mental institution.
Yeah, come on. Sundance is willing to go along with it because he wants out because
there's dames out there. Plus, he heard about this film festival that's been using his name. And the three of them want to make a movie to get into the Sundance film. They want to make a movie about – they decide to make a movie about Alan's experiences.
Alan wants them to be in it. They're begrudgingly doing it.
Yeah. Alan had such a great time with his friends in Vegas before he killed them. He wants to make a movie about those experiences. He wants to make The Hangover.
And he wants these two to play those parts.
With his pals Rambo and Sundance.
Rambo is,
He would get him to...
So Rambo is Stu. Because then he also wants Rambo to like sing a song. He's like, this is where Stu would sing a song. Make up a song, Rambo.
And then Sundance is the Bradley Cooper character, Phil. Yeah. And he is going along with it. All right, this is dumb, but all right, I'll go along. We're going to meet some dames.
Mainly because we don't realize, but like his master plan is like, all right, I need to get to Sundance to get to the bottom of this.
Right.
Because maybe I'll find out about me.
Right.
So that's why he's willing to go along with it. Rambo's willing to go along with it because...
What's his motive?
His motive is...
He's heard that this Sundance place shows a lot of movies that are anti-war, kind of down on war and the military and stuff.
He's going to take it out.
He's sick of these liberal pansies in there.
He wants to destroy Sundance.
Yes.
Sundance wants to discover Sundance, and Alan just wants to
film
into
Sundance.
Fabulous movie.
Wants to make this movie.
So we're not going to have Rambo kill Alan.
No, I guess not, sadly. Well, maybe at the end.
Maybe at the end.
Yeah, we can hold out hope for that. And so is the movie all about them trying to get... I guess if we set that up, the movie, they have to actually get to Sundance with their movie somehow.
But first they have to go to Vegas to recreate.
Go to Vegas to recreate this. And Rambo trying to play Stu keeps like... he can't really get into the Stu character. Stu was like this wimp, and Rambo keeps like punching guys out and getting into fights and stuff.
Not only that, think about how upset Rambo gets when Alan tries to knock his tooth out, because that's the way Stu had a tooth missing. Now, because Mike Tyson punched him, right? That's why Stu had the tooth missing? Yeah.
And so, when they do their version of it, Rambo gets into a fight with Mike Tyson.
Yeah, and kills him.
Yeah, kills Mike Tyson.
And Alan's starting to feel like maybe this is going too far, but it'll be fine. And Sundance is used to seeing people die. Old West. It just happens.
He's not used to seeing brain-damaged rapists die, like Mike Tyson. But they're the first time for everything.
That's true. He just keeps breaking in and like raindrops keep falling on my head. And like that's it. He finds his happy place and he just keeps moving on.
This will be especially good if we actually get Zach Galifianakis, Sylvester Stallone, and Robert Redford play the roles. And then,
I'm envisioning the end where it's like the lights go down in a movie theater, and like Alan's looking like joyously at the screen. The movie's about to begin, and then like Rambo slits his throat behind him, and like that's how it ends.
I was gonna say that works, and the movie's about to start, and then we pull back and see that it's all still in Alan's head. He's still in the mental institution.
And there's never
imagined,
been
any... He imagined Rambo and Sundance Kid helping him.
Yeah, that works too.
Slitting his throat works as well. Do we have to do the thing where the Sundance Kid meets Robert Redford, or do we just avoid that?
Well, it depends.
You can plausibly go to Sundance and never see Robert Redford.
Right, that's true. You've been very good at that, except for once.
I've been there 16 times, and I've seen him a grand total of like 10 seconds.
So I guess it would depend on whether Sundance meets Redford if we're doing, is this Alan's head eventually? Right. Or if it's not, if it's the time traveling thing.
Well, I guess either
one can kind of work.
Yeah, I mean, either way. Well, yeah.
You know what? Let's get some let's shoot some test footage for both,
okay.
and then we'll show it to an audience and let them figure it out.
I'll get Stallone on the phone.
Okay,
let me dial up my Stallone phone, my Stafone. I like that. That's a pretty good movie.
That's not bad. No, are we even going to try?
We're always terrible with the titles.
The Re-Hangover, the Hangover in My Head.
Hangover in My Head. Yeah, that's nice.
That's not bad.
That reminds me, by the way, our friend Mark of Mark and Mark. Mark listens to the show regularly.
Funky bunch.
And he said that the name I gave my cat, Dog Cat, sounds like the kind of title that we make up for our Pitch Me movies and stuff. That's always like a placeholder name. And, oh, we'll think of a better one later.
Ooh.
He's exactly right.
Does that make you want to think about changing?
No, I like
Dog
it.
Cat?
I like
Dog
it.
Dog Cat's stuck.
I still like it, but I like that okay. He's right. That does sound like yeah. A spur of the moment title. We would make.
Like, I don't know. I thought
it's about
this.
A dog who acts like a cat acts like a dog. It's called Dog Cat.
That's good. Move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We did that. That's the end of the show. Then
wait.
Huh?
Question of the week.
Question of the week. That's right. Question of the week for next week. The question is, will you please make up some questions of the week for us?
Question mark. Specifically, maybe some holiday-themed questions would be nice, considering we have Thanksgiving.
In particular, yeah. We have those coming up.
Hanukkah, New Year's, Christmas. They're all on their way. They're fast
Veterans Day. Veterans Day is still
Veterans
coming up.
Veterans Day. We're going to be doing our show before Veterans Day, though, right?
November 11th.
Yeah.
When that is.
Yeah, it's too late.
Questions of the week, question of the week suggestions, particularly holiday themed.
Help us out. If you go to Facebook and you see that there aren't at least 20 high quality suggestions, then go do your part. Add one.
Yeah, do that. You can also email us moviebspdx@gmail.com. That's a thing you can do.
You can. Hey, Eric.
Huh?
What'd you watch?
Nothing really.
I watched The Talented Mr. Ripley.
That's a good movie.
Here's how it went. My wife, on Halloween, Saturday mm-hmm. night, we'd already gone to our party on Friday night. And on Saturday night, we were going to watch a movie, trying to figure out what, or maybe some TV, or I don't know. And then out of nowhere, she was like, do you want to watch a Halloween movie? Like, okay. Is there a Halloween movie you want to watch?
She doesn't like scary movies.
She despises them.
Right.
So then it was like, what would you even want to watch? And like, I was trying to figure it out. And it was like, for a second, I was going to have her sit through the Monster Squad. And it was just, it sounded way too
risky. She wouldn't like that.
I didn't think so. But the way I sold it, it sounded pretty good.
I'm sure it did sound good to you.
So there was that. And then it was like, Ghostbusters? Do you want to see Ghostbusters? And it's like, meh, I don't know.
So how'd you arrive at Mr. Ripley?
I was skimming through iTunes, and it just like it was there for some category of thriller that I found, and I was like, oh, you know, I've only seen this movie once. I think
had she seen it before?
She'd seen it before, but she didn't quite remember it. And at the end, she decided it was too creepy, too unsettling. It was too unsettling.
Well, it was a valiant effort on her part to watch something,
yeah,
vaguely creepy.
So now. Instead of Cabin in the Woods being the most scary last movie she watched, it will be The Talented Mr. Ripley. That's now the extreme level. She can't go stronger than Talented Mr. Ripley.
It's not scary. I mean, it is creepy a little bit.
It's creepy.
Tense, sure.
It's creepy.
That's a good movie.
It's a really good movie.
People. And Matt Damon looks like Hilary Swank. That's back in the days when he looked like Hilary Swank.
Oh, I can see that. It's also, my gosh, just a killer cast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I forgot Cate Blanchett was in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That came out like Christmas time 99. It was the first holiday season that I was a movie critic. So it was like my first big holiday Oscar season of movies. And I remember loving that right from the get-go. Well, and it's about a closeted gay guy and all that.
Wait, what now?
I've known some of those.
I think you're reading into that movie. I don't see that.
I also remember about that movie, Matt Damon in an interview, and I've tried to find it and I can't find it, but he said in an interview that I read that people were like, how could you, you know, did it bother you playing a character like that? He was like, you mean a murderer? And they said, no, a gay guy. Like, that was people's reaction. And it's true. Like, people are, no one cares if you play a murderer.
Yeah.
But at the time, playing a gay character is like, wow, that's weird. Were you nervous about that?
Tommy. Yeah. Tommy. How's the peeping, Tommy?
That's a good movie. I have not really watched much of anything other than our assigned work.
I see.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a Woman in Gold. I have to watch that sometime.
No idea what that is.
Something like that. Ryan Reynolds and Helen Mirren.
I don't know.
It's a real movie.
Okay.
I swear.
Well, that wraps up the show. Spectre's okay.
It's not a bad Bond movie. No. It's not a bad Bond movie at all.
No, but meh.
It's no Skyfall. If you just want to compare it to the most recent.
I feel like everyone has sort of lost their passion for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Suffragette is pretty good. Oof. Not tons of fun.
No.
It's pretty good.
It's good. And what did I say?
Already.
The breast cancer movie.
You didn't care for it.
No.
Question of the week. Tell us some suggestions for a question of the week. And we'll be back next week with more reviews of just a whole bunch of movies.
I wonder if we're ever going to see Bridge of Spies, Peanuts, Straight Outta Compton. It's piling up. I don't like it. I'm not on top of things. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
I know. We got a lot
I'll
of
try. I'll get them next year. Yeah. I'll get them next year, just like my Cubs.
You can't get them all.
Right.
So until next week, for Movie BS with Darren Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said... Good day.
And 76, the 76th highest grossing film of all time.
What? 1946.
Ooh, all right.
It originally grossed $23 million, which is now worth $458 million.
Huge hit in 1946. Is that going to be It's a Wonderful Life?
I've Never Seen It is one of your clues. The distributor was RKO.
Doesn't narrow it
it's
down.
It's a drama. It's unrated. It's 2 hours and 52 minutes.
The Best Years of Our Lives?
Yes.
Oh, yeah?
I've never seen this movie.
I haven't seen it either, but it has to do with the war.
I was just going to say we should see it.
You love war. It's the only language you listen to.
What is it good for?
Yeah, it had to do with...
I'm gonna...
Yeah, it's World War II veterans facing difficulties as they re-enter civilian life.
All right, we need to pick somebody that was in this movie.
Is Hitler in it?
Hang on.
No Hitler. Why don't we choose let's choose another one that we've seen.
Really?
I don't know. How can we do... Well, actually, this would be interesting because there's going to be a veteran, and Rambo's a veteran, so they got a lot in common. Have fought in wars.
I mean, let's see. Can we? Do you even notice anybody from the? Does anybody sound familiar from the cast? I'm pulling it up right now.
Yeah, I mean, Frederick March. But I don't know any of these guys well enough to fake it, not having seen the movie.
All right. I think this might be a first ever redo.
We're gonna have to redo it because of our own ignorance. Due to our own ignorance,
that's right.
Of not having seen, I think it won Best Picture. Actually,
if we were better. The podcast would be better. But we're not.
All right.